Welcome back to the Lawfather Podcast. As always, we are here in Lawfather Studios inside of Lawfather headquarters. Big shout out to Radio Influence for always being there for us, producing a great show. And they have a lot of other great shows, so please check them out. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find all of the Radio Influence podcasts as well. So make sure you do check those out. As always on the podcast, we are streaming live. This time, we're streaming live on Facebook. So those of you who are on the Facebook live stream, just drop your questions in or any legal comments that you do have. And Jason will review them. And anything that's worthy of being on the air, we'll put on there. Because you'd be surprised how much crazy stuff people throw on there and expect me to answer. Things that are probably somewhat highly inappropriate that probably shouldn't be touched on and don't need to be touched on, or somebody just looking for a rise. But anyway, as always, the show is brought to you by Frankie Law, handling all of your personal injury and DUI defense needs. All you got to do is call 855-LAWFATHER, and that'll get you right to Frankie Law. So let's start with a follow-up from the show last week. Last week was all about the IVF ruling in Alabama. And if you know, to take a deep dive into that, go listen to that show. But the real gist of it is this. There was a Supreme Court ruling out of the State Supreme Court of Alabama that said embryos outside of the body are considered people. Okay. And it led to a string of IVF places that said, we are not doing IVF anymore because of this. Now, whether they said it as truly meaning it forever or until something changed, that was the stance that they were taking. And what it was, the case was about some embryos that had been destroyed in a storage facility. And it was a negligence action, a negligence case against this storage facility. I believe also the IVF provider as well. Well, sometimes there are these unintended consequences, and we got really into the weeds on those unintended consequences and what it really meant, and whether it was political or not political. Well, a couple things have changed, or one thing has changed in the past couple weeks since that show aired and you all listened to it. And the state of Alabama, the legislature in the state of Alabama passed a new law. Okay. They fast tracked it. They did it in like record time. Governor signed it right away and they were off and running because, you know, I really don't think the Supreme Court in making their ruling on a negligence case in something that probably that somebody probably should be held accountable for, that by making it so that somebody could be held accountable in that situation, created this scenario where you could have people who were never intended to be held accountable. For example, the doctors or the nurses dealing directly with these embryos as they're being inserted, right? And what we came to learn was that there's a certain amount of embryos that are destroyed or killed in the process of actually doing the procedure. So, you know, is it okay for some to be destroyed if the end goal is being met in terms of you're getting some to where they need to be and you're giving people the opportunity to have kids who probably otherwise couldn't if they didn't go through that procedure, right? To me, that's a risk well worth taking, right? Whereas what the Supreme Court ruling was saying was, well, when you entrust these embryos to this storage facility, they should have an obligation to treat these correctly, right? And to not be negligent and to not kill these embryos or destroy these embryos when they're in the storage facility, okay? So two really different concepts at play, but this one ruling affected both of these concepts. In comes the legislature. And this is how the system is supposed to work, right? So the Supreme Court, the state Supreme Court, is, and really all of the courts, right? Their job is to interpret the law, okay? Their job is to look at the law and interpret it and put real life meaning behind it, okay? Sometimes these laws are vague and it's the job of the courts to come in and fill in these gaps of these vague laws, right? And that's what happened was the state Supreme Court came in and said, well, this is kind of vague, and we're going to go, this is how this really works in real life. Okay. And they're going to put something behind it and make a ruling on it. Okay. Well, the legislature comes in and they make the laws, right? So you can have all this case law, which is what that Supreme Court case was, but the legislature can come in and go, nope, we don't like that case law. We're essentially going to throw that out, and we're going to create a law that covers that, and we're going to be specific, and we are going to address it, and this is what everybody is going to go by. And that's essentially what the legislature in Alabama did. So got to give them a lot of credit, because they did this super fast, and it fixed something that was, in my opinion, right, never the intent of the state Supreme Court. So what they did was they added in this law that the new legislation protects medical providers, and it allows, but it does allow certain civil lawsuits against companies that make equipment used for IVF if the equipment damages or destroys the embryo. All right. So what they're saying is the doctors can't be held responsible for destroying embryos. Okay. Makes sense, right? Because in order to do the procedure, it is a known part of the procedure that some embryos will be destroyed, right? It's the byproduct of it. Right? It's, from my understanding of it, it's something you take many, many embryos, right? And you only need to get one there, right? And in the process of getting one there, others are destroyed. But you're starting with this massive number, right? As you're putting them, as you're doing what you need to do with them. So, but what this does protect is, at least from my reading of it, and this is Alabama, right? This is not happening in Florida, that, hey, if somebody outside of the doctor does something that's negligent, that causes them to be destroyed, well, they can be held responsible. And to me, that makes a ton of sense, because look, if it's me, right? Now, well, until they change science, I can't actually have my own personal embryos. Yeah. But let's just say it's, you know, me and my wife, and, you know, take some of her embryos, and we go, all right, doc, we're gonna put them in your trust, right? And that doc goes, yep, no problem, because we're gonna trust them to this storage facility over here, because they store embryos. That's their job. That's what they do. They store medical stuff, right? And you go, hey, storage facility comes back and goes, hey, well, we're sorry, but we damaged some. Well, shouldn't they be held responsible, right? That's not part of the process, right? Storing them is not part of the process, and them being destroyed as a result of that really isn't essentially part of the bargain. You're not looking and going, hey, yeah, I think the storage facility might destroy some, or some of these tools might destroy some as they're doing what they need to do to move them from point A to point B, right? So fully on board with that. IVF clinics have opened back up based on this new ruling, and they are off and running. All is good, and the unintended consequences that came from that original ruling with the Alabama Supreme Court, don't need to worry about those anymore. Common sense has prevailed, for what it's worth, because I know these things always kind of head down the political path. This was actually a bill that was introduced by a Republican lawmaker. So for what it's worth, that's what it is. And all is good in Alabama IVF land. Now, bring that back to Florida, where we are, kind of in conjunction, kind of parallel to this Supreme Court ruling. The Florida legislature was actually looking at giving, and the term that was used was personhood status to embryos. Okay. And you know, the interesting thing is whether or not that bill was actually looking at whether it was embryos inside or outside. The Alabama Supreme Court ruling really dealt with embryos that were outside. And so it created this different wrinkle. What Florida has, and I think I touched on it when I took the deep dive on the IVF ruling in Alabama, but Florida kind of has this split in terms of how they deal with whether or not a fetus or an embryo is a person, okay? In criminal law, it is considered a person, okay? So if you commit murder, you have now, and the woman is pregnant, you've now committed two murders, okay? But the same doesn't apply on the civil side. So you can't bring, so let's say you had a mother who, a pregnant mother who was in a crash, let's say, and she's killed in the crash, and therefore then the baby is killed in the crash, right? The unborn baby is killed in the crash. You only have one wrongful death action, and that's the mom. There is no mechanism in Florida to deal with a civil suit for the unborn child, okay? And I think that's what that law was going to address. And I welcome, I've had a case where the mother lived, but the documentation showed, hey, you know, the miscarriage was a result of the crash. So the mom was able to recover as a result of the miscarriage, but weren't able to recover anything for the child in a wrongful death, because it only applies in criminal law. Florida, unfortunately, had put that law on hold once that Alabama Supreme Court ruling came up, because, you know, I think Florida would have been in the spotlight once again for some law creation. And I think Florida would have been the one with some unintended consequences of writing these things, and would have been forced to go back and make some changes to it. So I think Alabama may be a blueprint for a future Florida law that goes, hey, yeah, we're going to give an embryo, we're going to call an embryo a person, whether it's a criminal act or a civil action, and just kind of go from there. So I'd like to see that, because I think it would be beneficial all the way around. So that's the update on that. Let's switch gears to something a little less heavy of a topic, but, well, I say it's less heavy, but the consequences that have resulted from this have been catastrophic, okay? We haven't really heard much about non-catastrophic issues from this or crashes as a result of what I'm going to talk about, and it may just be a byproduct of we just don't get a lot of news on non-catastrophic type things, right? Catastrophe sells. I think that's what Journalist School 101 tells you, is the worse something is, the more newsworthy it is. But here's what it is. Autopilot is already better than human drivers. That may not be an exact quote, but maybe a slight paraphrasing, but that is from the Elon Musk addressing autopilot with Teslas. Okay, and that's what we're going to talk about here, is what happens when a car on autopilot crashes, okay? Or actually said another way, because autopilot is a term Tesla uses. Everybody has their own verbiage. GM has their own, it's Super Cruise for GM. I know Audi has one. I don't remember what Audi calls it, but there's these, each of them have these monikers. But what we're kind of getting into is, at least for some of these partially autonomous vehicles, and I'm going to use the term partially because there's actually a term for fully autonomous vehicles. There's actually a definition for that. Here in Florida, there's actually a statute that allows fully autonomous vehicles in the state of Florida, and there's an actual definition for what that is. And so, you know, what we're considering and thinking about is who's responsible if that car crashes, right? Because you're sitting there and car's driving itself and hits a tree, hits another car, as what happened in South Florida, goes under a tractor trailer, okay? What happens? Who is responsible for that action, okay? And look, the big cases have been a car that's gone under a tractor trailer, a car that's hit, it was either a tree or a pole, but led to a death and really catastrophic injuries for a child, right? Who's ultimately responsible for these things, okay? Let's look at, before we get into that, let's look at what an automated drive, Florida calls it an automated driving system, okay? And it defines what an autonomous vehicle is. An automated driving system, per the state of Florida, is the hardware and software that are collectively capable of performing the entire dynamic driving task of an autonomous vehicle on a sustained basis, regardless of whether it is limited to a specific operational design domain. What does that really mean? It's the definition. Our lawmakers like to use really fancy, funny wording that doesn't mean a whole lot at times. Nor do they like to actually ask people in some of these industries that they're making laws, how these laws would impact the industries. But that's a whole other topic for another day. If you're wondering what I'm talking about tort reform. It's probably something we covered. No, I know it's something we covered, but oh man, I'm going to talk about a law that didn't ask anybody in the industry how these things would work in real life, because we all scratch our heads too. Anyway, an autonomous vehicle means any vehicle equipped with an automated driving system. A dynamic driving task means all of the real-time operational and tactical functions required to operate a vehicle in on-road traffic within its specific operational design domain, if any, excluding strategic functions such as trip scheduling and selection of destinations and waypoints. A fully autonomous vehicle means a vehicle equipped with an automated driving system designed to function without a human operator. So here's something cool about Florida. Well, I don't know if it's cool or not. I'm not sure where I stand on this one, but Florida actually allows fully autonomous vehicles. Completely autonomous. You don't even have to have a driver in that vehicle. Florida will allow a vehicle that has no driver. And actually, Jason, do they have some of those in St. Pete Beach? Did I see those somewhere, like Vinoy type area? I want to say I've seen that, and it never really dawned on me till right now that there's these driverless automated vehicles. Okay, it's kind of scary when you think about, right? You're relying on that system of most likely cameras, radar, and whatever other technology they have to tell distance and whether or not someone's stopping or slowing down or coming into your lane, right? We're talking about things that happen in an instant, right? Is that system better? Now, what we know is this. We know that at least from a biomechanical point of view, right? And I know this from having trials that have dealt with this and have used a biomechanical engineer who has broken this down, okay? It takes about 2.5 seconds for you to, from the time you see something to the time you see it, your brain reacts to it, you take the action, and the car does the action that you've imparted into it. About 2.5 seconds. A lot can happen in a car in 2.5 seconds. Okay, so could a computer do that faster? Yeah, I would guess so, because you don't have this, you see it, you recognize it, you then have to take an action, then you have to impart that action onto this mechanical object, in this case, a car. Okay, it's kind of mind-blowing to think about that, right? That a car could actually do that. Another thing that an autonomous vehicle wouldn't be predisposed to is the concept of kind of human nature. And what I mean by that is, say you have a car coming in front of you, across in front of you, what happens is you would think, right? So if the car is going from right to left in front of you, okay, when you look at it afterwards, you go, well, if you just turned right, okay, that car would have kept going left. And if you went right to swerve out of the way, you would have missed the collision, right? Maybe a fully autonomous car can think that through, because it doesn't really have to think. It just does it. It sees a car going that way, it goes the other way. But what happens is in real life with real people, the car going from right to left, in order to avoid it, your brain tells you that you need to go left. And it actually puts you right back into the path of the car that you're trying to avoid, okay? Just pure basic human biomechanics. Okay. Sounds really simple, but I'll tell you what, I got that from the biomechanical engineer, not from myself, but somebody who actually does this for a living, to break it down and go, here's what happens, right? because you look at it, you look at the aftermath of a crash and go, if this person only went right, there would have been no crash, but they went left. Why did they go left? Right? Maybe it brought them into oncoming traffic. Maybe it caused them to actually hit the car. Well, that's why. So could a fully autonomous system take care of that? Maybe, right? Do you really want to trust that though? Do you really want to trust that that fully autonomous system is going to see it, recognize it, and make the right move? What if it's in that system's blind spot? Who knows, right? You know, we got this kid, there's a case down in South Florida. Guy driving a Tesla on autopilot, okay? And it's a highway with cross traffic, and guy takes his hands off the wheel. Maybe he's not paying attention, not really sure. I don't think he survived it to tell us what he was doing at that moment in time, but the autopilot didn't recognize this tractor trailer coming across. Car goes forward underneath the tractor trailer, underneath the trailer part, and catastrophic injuries, right? Fatality. And who's at fault? And you know, that's an important thing to consider is a person most likely would have seen that, right? If they were paying attention, right? We have to put that little caveat in. If the person who's driving is paying attention, they see that. But does the car see that? Let's bring it to this. Let's consider this. Coming through the mountains. I was just in Colorado coming, and to get to all the ski places in Colorado, you have to drive up through the mountains. And coming back, it was snowing. It was snowing, the roads were wet, and it was 20 degrees, okay? Now, me as a person, I know what that means, right? I know that there's a chance, and there wasn't a ton of traffic, okay? That's the other piece. Because if it's a heavily traveled road, or say it's stop and go traffic, you don't have to worry about this as much because cars are hot, right? They're leaving all the heat, the tires as they spin on the asphalt create heat, the cars themselves create heat, but there wasn't a lot of traffic, okay? So snow, wet road, not a lot of traffic, downhill, curvy, through the mountains, right? Well, that tells me that there's a possibility that there could be ice on the road, right? Is a fully autonomous car going to think through that and go, well, I know the road's wet. Okay, well, how does the autonomous car know the road's wet? Does it? You know? Okay, well, I know that it's 20 degrees. Well, yeah, the car probably knows because even the non-autonomous Chevy that I was driving came up with a warning telling me that there could be icy conditions. Okay, so maybe, right? Maybe it recognizes that it's cold enough. But what about the snow falling? Does it recognize that there's snow falling in the air? Yeah, there's automatic wiper blades, right? But is that wiper blade differentiating between snow, frozen rain, or just plain regular rain? Probably not, right? It's just going, okay, well, it's wet, and therefore I'm going to turn on, okay? Those types of things. And beyond that, how about the camera? This car had a rear view camera. I went to back up, couldn't see out of it. Why? Because on those roads, there's a lot of sand. That sand gets wet. Why is there sand? Because those of you who have grown up in Florida your whole lives may not know, but when it snows, right, when there's snow and ice, they'll do a combination of things. They'll put sand down to help with traction. Traction actually helps, or sand actually helps with traction on snow. Seems counterintuitive because if you threw a bunch of sand on just plain asphalt, it's really not that effective. It does the opposite. But on snow, it creates some traction. But it's dirty. It's really dirty when it gets wet. So it gets kicked up and you're constantly cleaning the windshield. But if your system, your fully autonomous system is relying on cameras, those cameras were filthy. I couldn't see out the rear view camera at all. I had to go old school, which my kids thought were hilarious when I said I was going to back out old school and turned around and looked out the back window. Those of us who are my age learn to drive. But anyway, I apparently very spoiled having cameras all over these cars now, because man, without it, it was not fun. It's a big car. Anyway, do we really think a fully autonomous vehicle can understand all of that, make those necessary adjustments, right? Drive in the way that it needs to I don't know. Or is that fully autonomous vehicle going to recognize, well, hey, I'm going downhill. And so because I'm on such a steep hill and it's such a long duration of a hill, because I'm coming out of a mountain, it's actually not a hill, it's an actual mountain, right? That I need to go in lower gear so I don't burn my brakes up. Or is my system just going to go, well, I notice I'm going downhill and I'm picking up speed, so I'm just going to put the brakes on. Well, what happens when you do that? The brakes heat up. You leave them on for too long. Guess what? Brakes fail. Okay. Now you can get them back, but you got to cool them off, right? One of the things that we learned in pursuit driving was if you tap the brakes, right, to slow yourself down, if you tap and come off, tap and come off, tap and come off, right? It's kind of like the old, if you were driving without anti-lock brakes. But what happens is that just that split second of coming off the brake, what it does is it's enough to cool the brake because you're moving, right? And you're moving through this cool air and it cools the brake pad off. So that way your brakes don't fail, okay? There's a lot of friction. It's really hot. If you watch racing every once in a while, you'll see like you'll see this glow of red spinning. You don't see it that often, but it's the same concept, okay? So will a fully autonomous system understand all of that, right? And so here's where we come all the way back to. Who's responsible when these crashes happen, right? We went through a long description of what it is and what's better and what's worse to ask the question of who's responsible, okay? And my first thought before I looked anything up was, well, maybe it's a product's liability case. Well, maybe it is, but maybe it's not, right? What Florida says in its law is that the fully autonomous vehicle is the operator, right? That's it. So who's responsible, right? It kind of leaves that up for grabs, which we're going to find out, which actually the South Florida case, Tesla moved to dismiss, the judge is allowing it to proceed, okay? So we may see some appellate decisions later on that either go, yeah, you know what? The manufacturer is responsible. The manufacturer does step in the shoes as the actual operator of the vehicle, right? Or they could do the opposite and go, no, it's not. Nope. It's all on the driver. Okay. So, kind of something to consider there. But what we have to look at is California is a little bit ahead of the game here in this. They've had two cases. I believe both of them went to trial in 2023. I know one for sure did right around November of 2023. I believe the other one was about in the middle of 2023. But what the second one was guys driving, has a minor in the car, and nothing salacious there, just the facts. You just happen to have a minor in the car and hits a tree. Okay. The minor's severely injured and the driver is killed in the crash. Families sue. They sue Tesla. And it goes all the way through to a jury trial. Okay. The jury found that Tesla had no fault in this at all, and that the fault was 100% on the driver. Remember, single car crash, so there's not anybody else involved that you could put fault on, okay? They said that it was not Tesla's fault, that he was driving the car, okay? Now, some of the wrinkles are they couldn't confirm whether or not autopilot was on at the time of the crash, but seemingly autopilot must have been on at some point. So it's a little unclear how they don't know, right? I would think that because it's a computer and because we know that even the really dumb computers that are in cars right now, every single car has these dumb computers. And I mean that just in a term of the opposite of what you would expect in something as high level as an autonomous driving system. I mean it as a very, very simplistic computer that is in every car that can detect when there's a crash, and when it does detect there's a crash, or in some of them, it's a hard braking incident, all right? Basically a sudden stop. It actually goes back 5 seconds and can tell you how fast the car was going, its Y-axis, its X-axis, the latitude, the longitude of the car, the everything possible. Right? And the latitude longitude tells you if the car swerved or went up, it not positioning, latitude, longitude, but car movement, latitude, longitude. Speed, some of them will tell you if there's lights, right? How is it, if a car can tell you all that, right? Every single car after 2014 has that capability, all right? There's a couple different manufacturers of those data recorders. So the data that you get is sometimes a little different, okay? They'll all tell you the speed, every single one of them, from 5 seconds before to 5 seconds after, okay? Every one of them. Okay, that's how it works. You're telling me that there's no way to tell whether autopilot was on at the time of the crash? Come on. Pretty sure your Uber app does it. Pretty sure your Uber app knows when you're in a crash. Heck, your iPhone now knows when you're in a crash and call 911. You mean to tell me, and the thing doesn't drive, right? You mean to tell me that that Tesla that's driving itself can't tell exactly when it was on or off? I'm not buying it, right? I'm not necessarily also saying, though, let's not confuse things, because I'm also not necessarily saying that Tesla should be at fault, right? That it shouldn't be this person's responsibility. Because the other wrinkle in this particular case, and this is where the difficulty gets to going, it absolutely is something that you could sue Tesla for. It's absolutely not. There's wrinkles in this case, right? And there's always wrinkles in every case. It just is what makes this case unique versus another case. The driver of that car had been drinking and was possibly impaired at the time of the crash. Changes the dynamics, right? What role did this person play, right, in this crash, because they were intoxicated and they were impaired? So it creates these wrinkles that we look at and go, well, we have some facts that line up, but then we got this one fact that's just way off, right? The South Florida case, the guy was on his way to work. So there's no testimony, or there's nothing showing that he was drunk. I mean, most people don't go to work drunk, although I'm sure there are some people that do. But I'd say higher percentage of chance that on your way to work, you're not drunk. So and there's been nothing thus far that has pointed in that direction, right? So you can go, okay, well, and you can't really compare California to Florida. It doesn't matter which state. You usually can't compare states. You can kind of make inferences when it's the first one ever. So you could kind of make inferences to the California one if you're arguing motions, because it's never happened here. But then you have this outlier fact, that California has this little outlier fact that makes it different. Okay. So that's the challenging part of as you're working through these types of things. All right. So we come to, is Tesla at fault? Right? Can they be held liable? I mean, to me, I think you look almost no further than the warning that the Teslas pop up when you go into autopilot, or there's a warning somewhere within the car, right? Whether it's as soon as you put it on or what it may be, that basically says, even with autopilot on, it's your responsibility to pay attention, right? Look, they're not necessarily fully autonomous cars. I don't think it's really intended to be, although it may eventually get there. And I think actually they've rolled out some software updates that have made some of them have the ability to be fully autonomous. Okay. But you know, the other side of the argument goes, well, you call it autopilot. And if you're going to call it autopilot, it must mean that you don't have to have any input whatsoever. Okay. I don't know. I'm not one that's going to give a car that much control. Have I used systems like that? Yeah. They're not bad little systems. It's kind of cool, actually. I had a car, you would go, and if you're on the highway, you put your blinker on, you just put your blinker on, the car would make the lane change by itself, right? So it's pretty cool from that perspective. Kind of good, like if you're on a road trip, let's say, and you grab something to eat, you put that on, and I would put it on, and I'd have one hand on the wheel still, but it made it a little bit better, right? Made it a little bit easier, because you didn't have to worry about the speed and the staying within the lane. It was keeping you within the lane. But hey, you got to watch out for whatever's around you, right? At the end of the day, to me, the beginning, middle, and end is you watching what's around you. So that is the fully autonomous vehicle. I'll leave with one interesting fact, because I keep seeing the new Cybertruck in crashes. And seemingly very simple driving actions. So an interesting thing is the arc of the steering wheel. Jason, did you hear about this at all? So in order to turn a wheel, the wheel all the way around, right? The steering wheel, that is, all the way around, it's like 1.5 turns is the normal trajectory of a steering wheel to put a car, like if you're turning left, 1.5 times around gets you like all the way to as far as that car will turn left, right? Well, Tesla's is like a quarter turn gets you all the way to the end of the turning radius. It's something crazy like that. And so what they're finding happening is if you don't know, and there was one, I think it was in Beverly Hills, and I think it was the valet driver who was driving the car and he drove it into a sign in Beverly Hills. What they think is he didn't know that the steering was different and oversteered because the steering was so sensitive on it. So those of you who like the Cybertruck, take a look at that, because apparently the steering is different. I don't know. Yeah. Always got to be a little different, Elon Musk. I did see one here on Kennedy the other day as I was working and looking out my window. Those things are massive. They are massive, massive vehicles. But they, I don't know, might be cool. Might not be. I don't know. I'm not sold on electric cars, mostly because the infrastructure's not there. I had an electric car, and the problem was you couldn't rely on the chargers actually working. So if you were going somewhere, I found about half the time where it said there was a charger. Yeah, there was a charger, but it didn't work. So could be a good thing once infrastructure gets up and running. But till that time, yeah, give me my old gas guzzler. Anyway, that is the Lawfather podcast for today. Remember, as always, the show is brought to you by Frankie Law for all of your personal injury and DUI needs. Check out all the shows on Radio Influence. Lawfather out.